Ahoy, friends. Thank you for tuning in to Truth and Justice. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for August 18th. This week, we dove into the missing persons case of Caden Black out of Wrightsville, Pennsylvania, and we heard from Caden's mother, Kara, about his last known actions. It's pretty obvious by now that I'm back in studio with Bob and Janet. This episode raised a lot of questions and brought up some theories, but before we get into that, Bob, do you have any housekeeping notes to get into?
All right, yes, we have kind of a big housekeeping thing going on. I'm struggling to explain this because it's hard to explain where we're going from here. But here's the thing. So when we started the season, I keep mentioning that I've learned a lot from this season. And one of the things that I've learned, and I said this a few weeks ago, was that a lot of the stats that we have about missing persons, they're not inaccurate, but they're misleading. You know, there's 600,000 children reported missing every year. So it seemed like we're going to walk into, like, there's tons of every day, all these cases of missing kids. When those statistics of a large portion of them are like teen runaways that are generally in a lot of cases are found the next, you know, the report goes out, they're found an hour later. The report goes out, they're found the next day. Some of them are people that just have just left. There's a lot of them that are like custodial parent issues. So that was kind of struggle number one as we started with this was we do get a ton of cases submitted to us all the time, but you'd be shocked how many of them. And as I mentioned last week, Erica Cantor has been helping like put us in contact. It's like the submission comes in, we start doing a little research, reach out, and they're like, oh, we found him. It happens all the time, constantly, which is good. So that was kind of one thing that's been a bit of a struggle, but we've been working through that as it was. But here's the bigger struggle. As I've told you guys in the last couple of weeks, what's been really heartwarming for me is that all of you, even though we're doing something so different, continue to tune in every week. I can see on the numbers that the number of people that are listening to the episodes are right. They're actually a little higher than normal. So that's good, you know, from a business standpoint, I guess. But here's my concern. And Janet and I talked about this kind of at length this weekend as I was kind of trying to decide what to do from here is we're not getting any engagement. Like I can see the numbers that people are listening, but then there's nothing. For example, Sunday's episode dropped. This case, I think, is super, super interesting. It's complex. It's something that I think that we can help put the word out in. And a lot of you guys are doing that stuff, but there was like zero posts on the fan page about it, which is odd. Our moderators are generally having to deal with hundreds of posts a day. And that's where my big concern came in, is that over these years, we have worked very hard to build up an audience of good people like you that want to engage and help and want to investigate and want to dig into things. And this season, the way we're doing this is not conducive to that. And I feel like our resource of our audience isn't really being tapped into because, like this case, we've got a ton of questions here and a lot of ideas and theories. But we can only really go so far with it because it's an open case. You know, we got to be careful about who, you know, what we're saying or who we're talking about because, you know, we can't be out like even implying that we're accusing someone of committing a crime. So it's put us in this conundrum. And I decided this weekend that we need to make a change, that this is not the way to do this. I don't think it's really fair to you guys for me to putting out constant episodes for where you guys are wanting to engage and help, and there's not much for you to engage and help with. And, you know, if there's no engagement at some point, there's going to become boredom, and, you know, we just don't want that. It seems like the format of this season has been a mistake on my part. Seemed like a good idea, but I can see this not working, especially when I look through my DMs and my emails and all the messages. The theme is very much the same with 95% of them. And it's, this is heartbreaking. I don't know how many more mothers I can listen to that have had their hearts broken. And are you okay? This must be very heartbreaking for you. And of course it is. It's tough. As I've mentioned many times, it is certainly not the emotional break that, you know, I thought it would be. So I'm admitting at this point that this was it wasn't as good of an idea as it seemed like it was. which leads us to, okay, now what? You guys, I think most of you know this, but if you don't, it's not like we can say, okay, well, let's just do another wrongful conviction and then start Sunday and start doing a wrongful conviction case. There is, you know, we do the investigation in real time, but even with that, it takes months of finding the right case, getting the case documents, doing initial interviews, doing a pre-screening of a case, deciding it's the right one, getting everything organized, and then moving forward with the season. That takes time. So it's not something that I can just start doing on Sunday. So this is where we're at right now. And I'm hoping that you'll all continue to bear with me through this process. I'm not going to scrap the idea of the missing persons case because I made a promise at the beginning of the season that we're going to highlight one case from every state. And I intend to keep that promise. The way that we're going to do that is going to be a little different. So however we end up doing, you know, whatever we're doing for episodes in this kind of in between time before we get to the next season, I'm going to, in one way or another, introduce a missing persons case from every state as we move along. So there may be a segment where it's this week's missing persons case comes from fill in the blank state. Here's some basic details of the case, and here's a way you can help. Here's flyers and stuff, and we'll put that stuff out. So we'll get the basic details out without, you know, having to go through the kind of emotional trauma. I was talking to Josh Hallmark the other day about this, because as you like, it's been a struggle, and he shared a term with me that I'd never heard. For those of you who don't know, Josh Hallmark is the host of True Crime Bullshit and very good friend of mine. He said it's empathy fatigue is the term that he put in, because he's had some experience in some missing persons cases too. And it was like, it just hit right on the head. And that's exactly what it is you just, you hear these people and your heart just breaks for them and you want to do something and you realize there's not much that you can do and it's painful. So that's kind of what I'm feeling. It sounds like that's what a lot of you guys are feeling. So we're going to fulfill that promise to at least highlight a missing persons case from everywhere, every state as we move along. That's thing one. Thing two, in the meantime, we've got to figure out what to do while we pick a case. We have a team of extremely talented researchers from all different walks of life, everything from PIs to attorneys to literally professional researchers that go through our case submissions and search out cases. They have been fully activated as of this weekend. They are on the hunt to find our next big case. They're also on the hunt to find shorter cases, maybe cases that are, you know, we have some contacts with some innocence projects around the country, cases where, you know, maybe they're in the middle of litigation, but they would love to have the story highlighted over a few episodes, like we've kind of did with like Pablo Velez and George Powell, things like that. So they're working on those too. Actually, interestingly, an hour before we sat down here, a friend, a longtime listener and good friend of mine from the UK reached out to me and just said, Bob, there's this case. It's from Scotland. That's a super interesting wrongful conviction case. He needs help. He needs some exposure. And so that's one that I may put on a cover, something where we can put out, we can do some good. As you guys know, our number one mission is to do good, do something good every time that we come on the air. And also to give you guys who are all chomping at the bit to investigate and discuss and hypothesize, to give you something to work with, to keep your skills sharp, because that's my biggest fear, is to lose this army of investigators that you all are, because we're not giving you things to investigate. So that's coming. So in the meantime, what I'm going to ask for you is to, I hate saying this because I say it too much, but bear with us. We are hard at work getting us to the point where we're ready to start a new full long form season. We want to make sure we have the perfect case and we have everything we need to do that. In the meantime, we're going to give you some weeks may be an interview with somebody interesting in the true crime space. Some weeks may be about, you know, there could be about a missing persons case that I think really is something we need to do. It's kind of liberating for me a little bit to know, like, every week we can come in and whatever is on topic, on mind that we think is important to put something together and put it out for you guys as we move forward.
And there might be an opportunity for us to spend more time on a specific case if we see that there is a lot of engagement or we do have more opportunities to dig into something that, you know, we can respond to that more on the fly, you know, and take a little extra time.
Yeah, it's exactly right. Because we don't need to be like, well, the format is one episode each case. If we do something about a case or an interview and there's a bunch of questions about it or there's more to move to further dig into it, we'll do another episode about it. So we're going to be really kind of dynamic as we move forward. Our first step is this Sunday, or for me as a producer and writer and host and editor of the podcast, it's like, now what do we do this Sunday? So what we're going to do this Sunday is, last week I told you guys that for Patreon, I'm going to do an episode by episode breakdown of the prosecutor's coverage of the Anand Syed case. And there's a ton of people that are super excited about that. And there's some people that are just like, it's been done to death. So this is what we're going to do. This Sunday's episode is going to be the first episode in that series. And I'm going to drop that ad-free in Patreon and then on our normal feed here. So everybody can listen to get an idea of what the format's going to kind of be, the types of things that we're talking about, to see if that's something that you would be interested in hearing. And also, as I told Zach and Janet, somehow it took me an hour and 20 minutes to recap a 56-minute episode. So you can imagine there's a lot to what I'm doing there. And that's because in this first episode, I wanted to put out and really explain the fundamental differences in how we have looked at the case and how the prosecutors are both approaching the case and approaching their production of the podcast about the case. The intent is not to be mean or negative towards the prosecutors. That's not it at all. It's just, this is a case that I feel very strongly about. I feel like we've done a really good job investigating, and so have some other great minds out there, much smarter than me. And they've kind of changed the narrative to where they're really putting out what seems like a very fact-based approach that's making people believe that Adnan Syed is guilty. I disagree, and I'm explaining why. So anyway, Sunday's episode is going to be episode one of that series. And then after that, the rest of that series is going to live on Patreon. And by doing that, if you're someone who's like, I don't know that case, I don't give a shit about that case, you only have to hear one episode about it, and then we'll be back to business as usual, or whatever our new usual is, the following week. If you're someone who's like, I know everything about that case and I'm sick of talking about it, same story. You don't have to hear about it anymore. If you're somebody that's like, I am fully hooked and I want to hear more and more about the Anand Syed case, you have a place to go do that over on our Patreon. And maybe down the road, once we finish the series, which is probably going to take months. I mean, there's like, if it's 20 episodes, we're talking 20 weeks. That's 4 or 5 months worth of episodes to put out about it. You know, there may be a time where we may take those episodes and then air them on our main feed later, but it would be obviously well after the fact. So I can't guarantee that. Just depends on how things shake out. You know, if we have another case ready to go, then we're just going to move on. If we kind of get to a point where we're not ready to start a new case, but I need to start doing like some traveling and prepping for a new case, that may be a time we may move some of those episodes and air them on the public feed. And for our patrons, if we do that, we'll also put something else out for you guys special on Patreon too, because it's not fair for you guys to pay to hear them and then 4 months later they're free on the other feed and you've already heard them. So all that being said,
well, before we go on, let me jump in here. You brought me in as the voice of the listener, so I know I'm speaking for myself, but I'm also speaking for a ton of listeners right now. I will go out and say thank you for doing what you've done with this season. I know this season was tough. It was tougher on all of us than we realized it was going to be. We knew it was a large undertaking. Even me being inside and being part of it, we knew it was a large undertaking, but we knew it was coming from a good place. And I think all the listeners understand that it's coming from a good place. And truly, I don't think any of us realized the toll it would take on all of us to try to go through this season. So just from all of us right now, a heartfelt thank you.
Well said, Zach.
And all of you in the chat, too. There's a lot of support in the YouTube chat right now. So I want to move on because I do want to talk about this case, but I want to lay all that out there for you guys. Again, we love y'all and appreciate all of your support on this. And also, because of this kind of very dynamic format we're going to have kind of moving forward, if you've got a case or something or a person you would love to hear interviewed or a case like, hey, could you do a couple episodes on this case or anything like that? Shoot us a message. Like, we're very open right now to covering anything. My goal is to put out every week content that is useful and interesting to you that we can do some good work with. So we're very open to that. And I hope you guys listen on Sunday. It's definitely a different format than what you've heard in a long time. I mean, I went back for that series old school where I took, and I'm going to burn through Yellow Notebooks. I went through literally a half of a Yellow Notebook taking notes on their first episode. Then I just sit down and just get my notebook out and just go.
So there are some folks who maybe are fully committed in their podcast listening time and are wondering, it sounds to me, based on what you've described, that you don't have to listen to the episode in question from the other podcast. Like, you absolutely, you will say, this was posited here, this is my response to it here, and you can just listen to your episode.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah, so. Great. And what you'll hear me say on Sunday, and I'll say it now too, is if you have the time, I would encourage you to go listen to them. I don't necessarily want you to take my word for it, but I can also tell you, as the one that's doing it, it is my goal to be as fair and honest about the whole thing as possible. So I'm like breaking down, they said this, you know, the especially like areas of contention, right? So Brett said this about this, and here's the documentation about that subject, and this is why I disagree with him. So yeah, you could certainly just listen to our coverage of it and you'll get all the information you need. But if you're a person that wants to verify that what I'm saying they said is what they said, right, then you can absolutely go and listen to it. But it's not required. You won't be lost if you only listen to our stuff.
I wanted to throw in there, too, when we're talking about the sort of grab bag possibilities of some cool upcoming episodes. For those of you who had, there were some great suggestions. I'll go look through my notes as well. But during the Pinion Pines case, there were some great suggestions from folks who really had great, interesting, thoughtful, detail-oriented questions about certain legalities and about certain approaches to wrongful convictions, that this would also be a great opportunity for us to be able to, you know, we can reference back to that case, but dig into some of the great, you know, I like, just off the top of my head, I feel like Sarah and Kate always have really great big picture questions. And I don't think we were able to get to some of those because we would have needed a legal expert. If you remember what you wanted to hear, again, I'll go back through stuff, but it will be super helpful for you to send that along to Bob as well, because that this could be a great opportunity to do that.
Yeah, and as we had mentioned then, I actually talked to him today. I could maybe get Colin Miller to come on and explain some of that. Because I let him know that, you know, I'm going to be doing this with the case. I didn't want them to hear about the, like, hey, you're doing another, stuff on the Anon case you didn't tell us. So we chatted a little bit, and, you know, he offered to help in any way that I may need. But anyway, so he may be able to come on and do that. And with that, Thank both of you for your support, everybody in the chat. So many people are throwing up super chats, and I love you guys all. You truly, from the bottom of my heart, thank you for all of your support. That said, Janet has 22 minutes before she
always
has
walk
to
away
go.
While the conversation's happening.
You have the questions, so let's.
So do you, my friend. So do you.
Let's zip through these questions as quickly as we can.
Let's do it. Well, first of all, before we get into the questions, I would love to hear from Zach about what he thought about this episode. This is another heartbreaker. We've said it. It's true. My heart goes out to Kara, and thank her so much for sharing with us about Caden. But did anything come up for you, Zach, while you were listening?
I had something big jump out to me. I don't know if it's anything, but I really came to the conclusion that I'm curious if Caden had a TBI, a traumatic brain injury.
Mm-hmm. From the boxing?
From the boxing. It could be from anything, but we know that he was boxing. We know that he was training to box.
Yeah.
And then you start to hear some of the things that she's saying. She's talking about him not seeming like the same person, like seeming different. And TBIs can cause personality change, even if it's slight, even if it's like just in a momentary moment. That's a good one. But even if it's just for that moment, it can change you. Your behavior changes, your emotions change. You can be perceived as just being off.
Yeah.
The other thing that comes up is like the little bit of confusion, the mental haze and the fog that you see. So we have the moment where he talks about the RV, or where she is talking about the RV and not knowing, you know, not remembering the story about the RV and his brother and how they were giggling about
it. Yeah.
And then on top of that, the other thing that really caught me is she talks about him calling the gym to see what time open gym is. But through this conversation, she's said it multiple times that he's like, he's a gym rat. He's going to the gym every day.
Oh, that's a really good
point.
He's
physically changing. He would know what time open gym is.
Yeah.
If he's going to open gym every day, he would know what time open gym is. So he's calling to see what time open gym is, which kind of, again, leads me to that possibility that maybe he's got a concussion. Maybe he's something along that line.
That's a huge catch that he didn't know what time the open gym was.
I know that that seems like a very small thing, but if you're going all the time, says he is,
yeah,
you would know what time open gym is.
You're so
and,
right.
And there's another thing that follows that is she talks about that, like, he's clearly gone through a physical change,
mm-hmm.
right? So that means he is going to the gym a lot.
Right.
You don't go through a physical change like that on going once a week or every once in a while. I mean, you have to have repeated time in the gym to have a physical overall change. Regardless, I know that there was a comment maybe about steroids. That doesn't matter. You still have to put in the time to get big.
Right.
Right.
So it's something that's really jumped out to me was that idea that maybe he had a traumatic brain injury.
Yeah. And that could play into a lot of, because the one thing for me is it doesn't seem to me that he just wandered off and got lost. Because what I found very intriguing about this case is the fact that there are no leads. There is not a single person that saw him, not a single person that talked to him, not a single, it was just that he just poof, vanished. Somebody, you know, if he had been like confused and wandered away or something, he would have turned up somewhere. Somebody would have seen him. You know, it seems like that's not absolutely true. I mean, there are certainly circumstances where that wouldn't be the case. But if you're on the right track and there's like, if it's altered his personality because of a traumatic brain injury, that could open up a whole new floodgate of, you know, you've got this guy that has this funny personality and all that. Well, maybe all of a sudden it's not so funny. Maybe that increases the odds of some kind of conflict.
Yes.
That led to his
decision. And that's part, I mean, that is part of that personality changes. There can be irritation. There can be things like that. There can be just sheer confusion. Like the whole cell phone thing, he could have left it somewhere.
Yeah.
And went for one of these runs that his mom talked about. And, you know, and the possibility that she brought up about him maybe getting hit and something happened to him.
Yeah.
Those are all, you know, viable off of this TBI idea.
For sure.
Concept.
Yeah. Great catch. Great work.
Yeah. It looks like a lot of people in the chat, that's your trigger, you know, a lot of people kind of are hearing that for the first time and going, oh, wow, either from personal experience or just some working knowledge of it who maybe didn't necessarily think of that before. And I do want to shout out Kate for asking similar questions in the follow-up. I that was not something that occurred to me. I was fixating on the idea of running at night because that does feel like a big risk factor to me. Mm-hmm. And I really agree. I mean, I think that's such an interesting theory. And I'm so, you know us, the first thing we want to do now is go back to Kara and say, have you had this conversation? Mm-hmm. What's happening? You know, and then kind of dig in.
Oh, and I will.
So, yeah.
And it compounds, right? So she already said that he was the captain of the football team. All right. So he's played football. He's played football for probably the majority of his life if he's the captain of the football team.
Yeah.
You know, for varsity.
Just known for head injuries.
So there's head injuries. That doesn't mean they're known, but every time you get a concussion, it becomes exponentially worse for you. So, I mean, there's so many things. There's a possibility. You know, I've played football my entire life. I know you've played football. I've never been diagnosed with a concussion, but I can almost guarantee that I've had them.
Yeah.
And I bet you feel the same way.
Yeah, for sure. I was diagnosed with one from football, but I'm sure I had more.
So, and they become exponentially worse every time. So if he got one boxing and he's already had a couple, I mean, there's a lot that can build there.
Absolutely. let's talk about the circumstances surrounding Saturday, because there were a lot of questions that came in about that. I'm going to start with Jill, who says, I feel like there was a big black hole of information from Saturday when he went missing. He was seen by a few people. What time? How did he see them? How did he see his dad drive or walk there? What was the time when he had no further communication with anyone? Walk me through step by step his day on Saturday. And what gym is he part of? My gym app, LA Fitness, tracks my location. And Jill, I also brought up some other questions, but I wanted to shout out some other folks who had written in with some more. So we'll start with that. I mean, that's a lot of stuff. I don't know that we know the answers to all of that. But
yeah, and I don't, because the way that Kara made it sound to me was, it seemed like the Fausts are the one that maybe have answers to most of those questions, other than his dad, who did see him on... I think she said she saw him on Saturday. It just sounded like, you know, Saturday was a normal day. So we know what'd she say, was around 6:30 when he called the gym or somewhere, or the
I do believe that's right. 6:30
or 7, something like that, where he wouldn't have had time to get there. I don't know the answer to most of those questions. The impression I got, which may have been just me filling in blanks, was in my own mind, was that the interactions with his dad were prior to that. That the reason that, you know, she pointed out that the call to the open gym was because that was kind of the last known contact that they had with him. But so, yeah, I don't know. And then I think they also, investigators too, seem to jump past that because of the fact that his phone location put him in the house all the way through Sunday morning. So maybe they weren't particularly curious about where he was on Saturday because they think at least they know where he was until Sunday, but victimology would be, you know, figuring out all those movements on Saturday would be important, I think.
Yeah, I'm still not clear, and I want to shout out Valeria and Michelle for having a lot of questions surrounding that cell phone and understanding, are we talking about usage? Are we talking about known usage? Or are we talking about apps that are talking to the Wi-Fi in some sense where it doesn't, that doesn't necessarily tell us if he's with his phone anyway.
No, so that was one of the things that is also very, very perplexing about this case. From the way I understand it, they could tell that the phone was connected to the Wi-Fi because there was apps like Snapchat that was running in the background, and through the app they could tell that the phone was connected to the Wi-Fi at the house. I don't necessarily think that means that he was using the phone. In fact, I think she said there was no contact. Because we talked some before the interview, we talked some off the record in the middle of the interview. So I don't know where all everything pieced together or what all you guys heard. But I believe it was there was no activity on his phone as far as like calls or texts or anything on Sunday. It was just that the apps showed, you know, through the cloning of the phone, they were able to get into the apps and see that at 9:28 a.m. the phone was still connected to the house Wi-Fi, and then the phone died. So I don't think that means that he was using the phone.
Lauren asked if anyone saw him after he deposited the check into his account, and if there's any video footage of any of that. Robin also asked any local Ring video, for example, from neighbors to see if they looked to see that whether he left the house. I mean, these are key questions that, of course, our listeners are coming up with.
Yeah, and I believe they did check Ring cameras, anything around the neighborhood, and didn't, because, you know, she was telling me when I first started talking to her that, like, it was they checked cameras, street cameras, Ring, like, just like to see him, and like he nobody ever sees him anywhere after that. As far as somebody seeing him after depositing the check, yeah, because he deposited the check on, I thought she said Friday is when he deposited his paycheck.
That's what I remember as well.
Yeah, so that was Friday. They have the bank records to confirm that. They have the receipt from him doing that to confirm that. And it was Saturday, the next day, that his dad saw him, and I believe the Fausts saw him as well on Saturday. Because that's what they said when they reported missing was, we realized that we hadn't seen him since Saturday. So they said they had seen him on Saturday.
Well, Caroline asks, has Caden's mom talked to his friend Ethan directly or only through his dad, Chris?
I don't know.
Sarah says, do we know how many people live at the friend's house? Did Caden have his own room? Sounded like a smaller house, so it might seem a little odd not to notice that he was gone for that period of time. And did anybody else in the house try to contact him? That, you know, a lot of questions around, as you would predict, the Fausts, just because of the circumstances.
That's the whole kind of bugaboo with this whole thing is, it is kind of a small house. I believe it's a 3-bedroom house, and I believe that he had his own bedroom. I think it was just, you know, the parents had a room, Ethan had a room, and Caden had a room. But he did have his own bedroom there. But it was a small house, and she had told me that there was one of the doors you couldn't go through because they had like a ramp or something for like a handicapped dog. So there was only one door in and out of the house, and you kind of had to walk through the house to get to it. And that was the thing that everybody was so perplexed about, was that, you know, Chris Faust said that he was awake and up and in the kitchen at 6 a.m. and was around all day. In order for Caden to leave, he would have to walk right through the living room and kitchen and stuff to go out of there. And so the thought was he must have left in the middle of the night. He must have left the night before. But then they see, well, his phone was connected to the Wi-Fi until it died at 9:28, which wouldn't be that odd, except for the phone's not in the house. At least nobody has found the phone in the house yet.
And Teresa's just looking for that clarification. Teresa in the chat is just wanting to clarify. So they can tell from cloning the phone that it was the battery that died, not that the phone had been turned off.
I'm speaking only from what Kara told me and from what I short Google search. It sounds like, yes, I've never, ever heard of this before. So mm-hmm. I have no, you know, depth of knowledge to speak on it other than those two things. But that was the understanding that's what Kara understood to happen. I did look up, like, can they clone phones and through apps and stuff? And it seems like, yes. I don't, as far as know that the battery died, I don't know. That's what Kara said. I don't know if that's accurate. But yeah, but that's where the big confusion comes in. And I know a lot of your wheels are turning right now and are maybe pointing fingers in your head about what that might mean. But it could mean, it could mean a lot of things, you know, for like Chris to say, well, I was up and in the living room or in the house the whole day and I never saw him leave his room. Well, when someone says they were somewhere a whole day, surely we don't think that he went the entire day without ever going to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So like being there the whole day doesn't mean he was sitting in the kitchen the whole day. There's certainly circumstances where he could be out of the room, step into the backyard, step into the bathroom, go grab something from his bedroom. And that's when Caden left. So just keep in mind that that's a possibility here too.
Well, the one thing I'll say too is I have to commend the police on this. They genuinely seem like they're going and trying their best to figure out what happened.
Yeah.
Unlike in a lot of these cases we've talked to, they're going through, I mean, even to the point that they've listened to the psychic. I mean, they are trying to find him. So I feel like they're checking
things. And they literally, in one of the, there was, I think Dateline did an article about, an online article about the case, and then there the police were quoted where I think I'd mentioned it in the podcast where they said, like, we're not even asking at this point, we are begging for someone to, because they're just completely baffled by this case.
Yeah. Well, Lynn says, to quote Bob, what changed? And Lynn says she can only see the new job and wondering if there could be some kind of connection there. And some other folks asked about the moving job and so forth as well.
Yeah, I mean, all I can tell you is that I agree, and that's, I love that you guys have like listened to this process over the years. But yeah, that's the thing, is what changed in his life. The thing that we know that changed was a few weeks prior to that, he got this new job. I do know the coworkers have been interviewed, sounds like multiple times, by police. But that's something to be thinking about, was what changed. But then the other thing is that, you know, we don't know what we don't know. Like what Zach mentioned with a traumatic brain injury, that could be the thing that changed that we just don't know is the case.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that came up too in the conversation with Kara about searching for over the land that belongs to other people and stuff like that, Kate says, don't the police normally ask permission of residents for group searches to notify them that there may be strangers walking on their land? Like, do we know if those attempts were made or if that was just sort of a, like, let's step back on that because we don't want to get into people being angry or whatever?
I don't know. That was one of the things that I want to, I have a list going that I want to use, which I do in every one of these episodes, that after we do this episode, I'll usually contact the parent again, you know, I'll contact Kara and give suggestions. But that was one of the things that, to begin with, it's not as simple as letting you know, hey, people may be walking on your property. They have to either, you can't just go walk, even the police can't just go walking on someone's property. They have to either have permission to be on the property or have a warrant to be on the property. So I don't, and I don't know if they've had complications with that or whatever, but it seems like to me that they could take a block of property owners and try to get permission to search the area. I can't imagine any innocent person would say, no, you can't go searching for a missing person in my property, and then kind of grid search one area at a time.
Sarah was one of the people that had some interesting questions about the moving company. And for Sarah, kind of flagged this idea of sometimes paying the employees in cash and sometimes via a check, and thinking that that, you know, not going to the place of, oh my gosh, this means something huge, but just kind of questioning that practice and wondering, and based on kind of what Kara was saying about the police and how they were discussing that company, that maybe there was something there that needed to be further explored.
It could be. I mean, that's not an uncommon, it's illegal, but it's not an uncommon practice. I mean, let's face it, a lot of people are always trying to find ways to not have to pay taxes. And that's one way, one way to do it is to pay them, is to pay them in cash. And again, all I can really say about that is that, you know, we know that they've been questioned. It seems very much that the, you know, they're on the police's radar because they were aware of that. And we'll just have to see what turns up with that.
Kristen asks if there's like a partner in the picture, like a romantic partner, a girlfriend, someone in the picture that we know of.
Not that I'm aware of.
And then just kind of from, again, Sarah with a sort of a broader view with a great question, what standards have to be met to obtain a search warrant for a house and or property? And is this complicated by the legal difficulties in declaring an adult to be a missing person? Great question.
It is a good question. One thing, to get any search warrant, you have to have probable cause. Like, you can't just say, hey, I think that maybe something happened here, so I want, like, you have to present to a judge reasons, a probable cause, to give you probable cause to suspect something happened there. I'm sure it does complicate things if you have like an adult that, again, is, you know, they're allowed to run away if they want to. So you have to kind of show, you have to have evidence that a crime committed or a crime was committed, and then have to have probable cause to show why it's important for you to search that space. So I'm sure it does get complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And Janet, I know we're not through this yet, and I know that you have an out here in 2 minutes, so maybe we should let you go and then let Zach.
Sure. That was actually the last question. So,
oh, perfect.
Yeah, so that worked out. But then I want to acknowledge in the chat, there's some conversation about marijuana, like potentially playing a role to either exacerbate or, you know, not help a TBI situation, and kind of talking about that.
Yeah. And Kristen in the chat made a great point when we were talking about what changed. She just said his memory changed. And that's a great point and a great way to put that.
Yeah.
And so with that, that's perfect. We're out of questions, so we can wrap up the episode right here. I know I took up the whole first half of it with all of our housekeeping stuff, but that's stuff that needed to be said. I'm talking fast because Janet's got to go. But thank you all for listening. We love you guys. Can't wait to tune in next week. Make sure to tune on Sunday. At least hear me out for one episode on this non-coverage. And then we'll, you know, who knows what's coming next. We love you guys. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Justice is an NBI Studios production. All music for the show is created and composed by Shane Yoder at PutThemInASong.com. The font you see on all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com design, created, manages, and maintains our website, Truth and Justice Pod, where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Erica Cantor, Melissa Cardenas, Kay Woodyomnik, and Danielle Rohr. And as always, thank you to all of you for your engagement and your support. If you like the show and you want to support us, you can do that in a number of ways. The number one way for you to support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. If you join our Patreon, not only will you be financially supporting our work, but you'll also get something for your pledge. For just $5 per month, you'll get all episodes ad-free and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups that include an hour-long pre-show chat exclusive to our patrons. Other levels will get you a Truth and Justice Army t-shirt, Truth and Justice hats, and even the opportunity to co-host a Friday follow-up episode. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny, and it goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a case that you'd like us to consider covering, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page, follow us on Instagram, or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. And for all of you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod. To follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found @BobRuffTruth, Janet can be found @JanetVarney, and Zach is @Z2TheQ. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.